Well, we're in a bit of a lull in the sporting calendar. The peak of the NFL offseason is kind of off. We're waiting for the NBA playoffs and we're waiting for the start of the baseball season. But we're going to find some stuff to discuss on Third and Five. That wasn't a particularly good sell for a lead into an American sports podcast, was it? Basically saying we've got nothing to discuss, but here's an hour of chat coming up. Welcome into Third and Five. Simon Hampton here with James Thwaites and Dave Rice, guys.
Love it. I think you said waiting for every single sporting event that you did in the intro as well. So lots of waiting at the moment. Doing good. Spring's officially here for us in the Northern Hemisphere. Which is good. Trump's apparently going to jail this week. Everyone's bringing out AI chat clones. So Google's released theirs. The Third and Five chat AI bot will be out later this month, I'm sure.
We're going to record this podcast via chat GPT.
Yeah, this isn't even us talking. We're an AI bot now. We're alive. We're about to going to become Skynet. Lots going on. It's good. Well, lots going on, but not a lot going on. Everyone's getting injured in the NBA. Zion Williams, I see, is like not coming back for another 2 weeks, which is basically their season done again. So a bit of a nightmare. Paul George is injured for the Clippers. He's out for 2 weeks. KD's still out. The Nets still just suck, so they're playing like they're injured. It's still weird time all around. But Dave, how are you, mate? What's news with you?
Well, on a personal level, I think I've proven every bit of my 36 years of age. I've started playing six-a-side soccer spring season and touch rugby spring season. Have just kicked off, and I've already am out injured for a few days because I had to get my big toenail removed yesterday.
You're going to run out of digits.
I actually said this to Jess, I've pretty much got a clean slate of fingernails pretty much across the board. I did the same thing to my big toe in the fall. So it's just try and be good and get out there and be active and do these things. And then I'm bloody, off to the bloody specialist to get treated. So enjoy the next sort of wee while, Simon, because, it just gets a bit harder. It's pretty frustrating because, I've had the best of intentions to get out on the pavement, but I need to have a few more days or take it easy.
You got to stretch.
So you're falling apart. We're now, instead of an AI podcast, we're now a health podcast. I now have a CPAP machine because I snore loudly. So what's going on with you at 29 years young? Have you got any health issues?
Yeah, I got one of those one of those ambulance wristbands that you can press. I'm good. I got a bad back sometimes, but I'm good.
Hey, speaking of injuries and new starts and health issues, this relates to none of those. But Scott Robinson's the new All Blacks coach.
Yeah, about time. It's a funny one because it was awkward having that press conference there when it's such a big year for Ian Foster, the All Blacks coach, going into this World Cup, which the more I think about it, the more sort of winnable I think that World Cup is for the All Blacks at the end of the year. I don't think they're favourites by any stretch, but I'm a little bit more confident of their chances than I was maybe 9 months ago. But yeah, a little bit awkward, but I guess they had to do this to lock him up and make sure that he doesn't get poached by any other teams before next year. But I'm excited to see Scott Robertson in charge.
It's definitely one of those things where it's because you could make a pretty good argument that Jamie Joseph and Tony Brown, who are the sort of the main kind of rivals for taking this, with Foster putting his head out of the ring, they arguably have a better credentials. They've been coaching internationally for a lot longer, so they've kind of done both. They've had pretty good success with Japan. Scott Robinson's never coached anyone really but the Crusaders, maybe Canterbury before then, so only domestic. But, at the end of the day, the public absolutely demanded it. You couldn't give it anything but Scott Robinson just there.
At the end of the day, though, Dave, are any of those other coaches able to break dance in a suit on a rugby field? The answer is no.
I think Tony Brown's got a pretty good – he's a bit of a cult hero. But so one is obviously kind of, it was demanded, but I think it's just a reflection that New Zealand Rugby just sort of sat back to see how we went, and if we did well, then Foster gets resigned. If we don't win and they want to get rid of him, those two coaching sort of candidates would have been signed up elsewhere. So I think it's just a reflection that's what's been happening in previous, you know, like whether it's like the English job, like basically getting poached by other either clubs or countries in advance of the World Cup, knowing that that's been at their sort of premium value.
Yeah, no, I agree. I also wonder if there's a little bit of an acceptance maybe from New Zealand Rugby that they need to kind of re-energise the All Blacks a little bit, and a guy like Scott Robertson is probably better suited to do that and engage more with the public than Jamie Joseph, who is a very good coach, don't get me wrong, but is not quite as charismatic, should we say, as Scott Robertson, who's, you know, sets the bar pretty high for that as far as rugby coaches go. So I think that, you know, that's not the main thing, but I think that would have helped a little bit. So interesting selection. It's going to be interesting because I know I was reading, it sounds like he's been given blank canvas to overhaul the coaching staff and bring in all of his new people. So from 2024, it'll be a pretty new look All Blacks coaching setup and makeup of that coaching staff. So will be interesting to watch. But let's rip into it and bring things back stateside and start with the NFL. I mentioned it's hit a bit of a lull now after that sort of craziness of the offseason. 5 minutes before we record this podcast, Elijah Moore from the Jets traded to the Cleveland Browns. So the Jets, I think they're getting Mecole Hardman in, so there's sort of one in, one out at wide receiver for the Jets, who are basically the centre of the NFL offseason at this point with the ongoing Aaron Rodgers discussion. But the interesting one for me is also Lamar Jackson and what's happened with him, because that was a big story when he got a non-exclusive franchise tag from the Ravens. And since then, it's been very quiet on the Lamar Jackson front. So why do you think this has been the case, and is there going to be any movement on that, do you think?
Yeah, it's pretty interesting in the NFL world at the moment. Like you said, it hit a bit of a lull. Like, there were some few transactions over the last few days. Dalton Schultz not signing back with the Cowboys. So they've obviously got a gap to fill at tight end. Elijah Moore now being traded to the Cleveland Browns for a second-round pick, which is very interesting. So it kind of like signals to me, I think, in the NFL world that the Packers want more picks than they do actually want players. But yeah, this Lamar Jackson stuff's been super interesting to watch because he represents himself. He's his own agent, so he negotiates his own deals. So, you know, it's a bit of a unique situation, but it's becoming less and less unique in the sporting world. Richard Sherman, I think, was one of the biggest stars to more famously do it a few years ago. But basically, with Lamar Jackson, I don't know if we are going to see much movement anytime soon. And with this non-exclusive franchise tag, it clears things up a little bit, but it also makes things a little bit muddy. So teams, to be able to like put a contract out there to Lamar Jackson, they need to have two first-round picks available. So anything that doesn't have a first-round pick, immediately scrub off the board. So that takes out your San Francisco 49ers and stuff like that. That doesn't mean they can't do a sign-and-trade for Lamar Jackson, which is entirely possible. But it does remove them from being able to negotiate with Lamar Jackson directly. Also, if somebody puts in an offer for Lamar Jackson and the Ravens match it, that team that put in that offer, they can't be involved in a sign-and-trade for Lamar Jackson either. So it's kind of like this weird stalemate going on. Lamar Jackson's gone out there. You know, there were reports that he was going to have more guaranteed money than Kyler Murray, and he denied the deal. Apparently that he tweeted saying it was bullshit. So it was far lower than that. But yeah, it's a weird world because we're all kind of just sitting here holding our breath and don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you know, I agree with you. I don't think it's going to get resolved for at least a month. I think it could go past the draft. It's crazy that no one that is like, yeah, you did talk about there's a few that are ruled out because of not having the picks or whatever, but I'm surprised teams that aren't in that sort of top five pick. So I'm thinking of someone like the Falcons. I would have probably thought the Panthers before they traded up might have been in the mix. So it's probably why the Colts, I would have thought the Colts may have looked at it as well. But because they are, what are they, three or four pick, fourth pick? So they're probably going all in on one of these QBs. But crazy not to think that Lamar, 25 years old, MVP only a few years ago, you know, it gets a little bit of flack being like a running QB and, you know, that what it does to the body. But I'm pretty sure his injuries have not been as a result of him being he's very good at like avoiding getting hit. He seems to, you know, very rarely actually get hit. He basically evades everyone all the time. So it's crazy that there isn't the demand to even just engage and try and work out a deal to get him on their book, because he's a kind of a face of a franchise. You can build around him. Yes, he's more expensive than a rookie, but he's proven. So,
yeah, you know, the one I'm actually kind of baffled has not sort of gotten involved or at least made some noise is the Jets. And I'll tell you why. Because I was talking about them last week about how they've got no leverage now in the Aaron Rodgers sweepstakes. Here's a perfect chance for them to get some leverage. They go out, make some noises about Lamar Jackson, leak some stuff, show some interest. That, to me, would be the perfect way to force the Packers' hand to try and get this deal done. Because right now, the Packers can just sit there and say, until you give us what we want, we know your fans are clamoring for Aaron Rodgers and are expecting him to be in a Jets uniform by the start of the season. And so they can wait, you know, for plenty of time. They, you know, the money for Aaron Rodgers is not due for quite some time from the Packers. And so it surprises me that the Jets haven't sort of at least made noises about Lamar Jackson to show that, hey, you're not the only ones we're negotiating with on the quarterback front, and, you know, force the Packers to then say, okay, maybe we do just need to get this deal done and move on and take what you're offering us at the moment. So I think he's going to play for the Ravens next year, but yeah, I mean, and yeah, there's definitely other teams out there that make more sense for him from a playing perspective, but I'm just surprised we haven't heard more noise out of the Jets camp that they are, you know, interested per se in Lamar Jackson.
When you started off with this, I was like, no fucking way. You took me around to it. This is kind of like a little schemey, like business.
This is what the teams should. This is what teams do all the time. I'm surprised the Jets aren't doing it.
And I mean, it's smart. They should do it.
And also, I mean, if you're a Jets fan, you know, which Thwaites has been one for about 3 weeks.
No longer though.
Like, who are you? Would you rather Roger? Like, and I'm thinking not just for 2023. I'm thinking you should be thinking a little bit beyond that. Arguably, the Lamar gives you, you know, Rogers is you're getting one, maybe 2 years, right? And then you're going back through to try and get a replacement. Lamar, theoretically, you've got someone that, you know, could be five-ish years. So arguably, Lamar's a better shout from a, you know, we're not just trying to win in 2023. We're trying to be, you know, right up there for the next 3 to 5 years.
I like it. I mean, the hard thing is, like, the Jets own, so this is probably the other thing that plays into it. If the Jets do put an offer out there to try to do it and the Ravens accept it, they have to give up two first round picks. I wonder what they ask. I really want to know what the asking price for Aaron Rodgers is. Because in my head, it feels like 2-2-2. Two first rounders, two second rounders, and two third rounders. Because with this Elijah Moore thing, like, I feel like they're not wanting players. Unless it's, like, Garrett Wilson or Sauce Gardner is, like, involved. But
it's got to be a steering contest, right? Like, there's got to be an offer for the Jets on the table when the Packers are saying yes and this, and the Jets aren't willing to give them whatever that is. Like, or else they would just get this deal done. I think it must be there is something that's just one piece. Either, you know, we talked about it last week, whether it's a player or whether it's, you know, one more first-round pick or something that the Jets just are saying no at, and it's a steering contest because both sides know that a deal probably has to get done and they're just waiting to see who blinks first.
Yeah, it's just it's a weird time in the NFL because it was that massive flurry, then kind of slowed down a bit. Now we've kind of got like probably the two big things that are sitting out there are clearly Aaron Rodgers and Lamar Jackson. And both, like you said, like you're in just kind of this weird staring contest mode. So I'm hoping as we get closer to the draft, there's more certainty because surely if anything's going to happen with either of them, you want it done before the draft. So you know what players you're surrounding, you know, with like, but yeah, I don't know. Like part of me just feels Lamar Jackson's not going anywhere. Especially like Dave, I think you nailed it on the head with some of those ones at the top of the draft. You know, like the Colts and stuff like that, like they just feel like too high up the draft order to be willing to do it.
And it's a risk, right? Like, Lamar's a fantastic quarterback, but if the Colts, say, are going to go and do this, they're going to pay him a premium rate, they're going to give up premium draft picks, and they're going to get a guy who's very good, but is not necessarily like going to propel your team to a championship. Like, he hasn't done that for Baltimore yet. So, there's a huge amount of risk, and I can see why it's giving a team with a top five pick some pause. But I'm interested to see. You know, I think you're right about the draft and the Rodgers stuff because I think the Packers are going to want a Jets first round pick, and they're going to want to use that pick themselves. So hopefully that's the sort of deadline to get a Rodgers deal done. But we'll see. There's certainly plenty of coverage of it, and so plenty of noises. And plenty of interesting stuff to follow. But let's move on to the NBA then. And you touched on it before, Thwaites. It's a ton of injuries going around the NBA at the moment. Paul George out for a couple of weeks. Zion Williamson, as you say, another 2 weeks before he's reevaluated. KD, of course, is injured at the moment for the Suns. I think Kyrie's out for a little bit potentially, or had an injury scare. So the injury bug really going around the NBA at the moment. For me, though, the NBA is so boring at the moment. I'm just like, most teams have about 10 games until the playoffs. I'm just hanging out for the playoffs at this point. What about you guys?
Yeah, it's weird. Like, when we were first talking about ideas for this week and you popped it up, I'm like, NBA isn't fucking boring. And then I was like, actually, it is. Like, I actually couldn't tell you the last NBA game I went to live and I have tickets. The kind of interesting thing where I think they really drop the ball, and this is something that I think the NFL does incredibly well, is the NFL constantly creates storylines. You know, like, when you think about it, you probably know who the number one seed is going to be like 3 or 4 weeks out from the final, or have a rough idea of the one and two teams that are going to do it. But they're constantly shoving in your face, like, it's a battle for the wild card spot. Here are the odds of, like, people that can slip into the playoffs or not. The NBA doesn't really do that. And I don't know whether it's because there's just so many games on all the time. But, like, I would be shoving that down people's throats. Like, all the important battles, kind of bringing up, like, the statistics of, like, what teams can make it and can't. Because, like, the West especially is an absolute nightmare for that playing spot at the moment. There's realistically probably 6, 7, 8, 9 teams that could all slip up and down into that play-in spot, because the difference between 12th at 35 wins and 4th at 38 wins is 3 wins. Like, it's insane. We just don't hear about that much. Like I said, it's just weird.
Yeah, and you've got the Nets and the Heat basically battling it out to try and avoid the play-in as well in 6th and 7th in the East. There's stories there. It's just hard to really, they're just not grabbing my attention at the moment.
Yeah, because when you look at it on paper, you're right. Like, the Nets most likely are going to slip out. So it's kind of like that battle between, you know, the Heat and Brooklyn, like, who can hang on? Because there aren't that many games left.
No.
But that West side of things, like, the Lakers, I mean, the Pelicans you could probably rule out at this point with Zion out. But, like, the Lakers, like, when's LeBron James back? What's going on there? Minnesota, they're getting Karl Anthony Towns back, I believe, this week. And he's been out of the lineup since, I think, November. Dallas, like, the Kyrie storyline, you know, like, the Suns with KD. Like, it's all there for the NBA. It's just really frustrating they don't sell it more.
We've talked about before that I think that this NBA is too long. 82 games and... it's a bullshit reason that it's 82 to begin with. but it's obviously all about money. They're going to be so
you sitting there with this opinion as you wear a New York Yankees t-shirt saying that the NBA season's too long.
But that doesn't change. Just because I'm wearing a Yankees top doesn't mean I'd say the majority of people in the world that wear Yankees merchandise have never watched a minute of baseball in their life.
Oh no! But what I'm more saying is like, do you both have the same point of view with baseball?
100%. I mean, baseball is ridiculous. 160 games. I'm not trying to. But we're not talking about baseball. We're talking about basketball. What I'm saying is, 82 games is too long. What we're seeing right now is very clear to me that the teams are just managing their workload. They basically have, you know, a playoffs around the corner. They're making sure that their guys that might have a little niggle, whether it's a Kyrie, whether it's LeBron, who may have come back earlier, Lakers have to be a little careful, and even the Mavs, because you could be out of it all altogether. That's how close it is. But they'll be managing these guys to try and get them in to be fit and firing for the last few games into the playoffs. And it'll be the same with Ja Morant, who's going to be rusty. He's been, obviously, he had different reasons, but he's been out of the game for, what, maybe 10 games. We'll probably start to see him be phased back in this, maybe tonight even. And obviously, yeah, you've gone through, you sort of listed out a bunch of them, but it's because the season's so long, these guys are now, they want to be absolutely at their peak in April, mid-April, when the playoffs start, not right now, when they could get injured. So I think it's a reflection on the fact that the season's too long.
I will leap to the defense of baseball quickly and say that I agree 162 games is too long, don't get me wrong, but baseball has a better case for a longer season just based on the fact that the volatility of results game to game mean that you do need a long season to sort of find that balance and that and the quality to rise to the top. I don't think that's the same case in basketball, but yeah, I mean, it does feel too long.
Do you also think, like, as I sit here in a Brooklyn Nets t-shirt with a signed Kevin Durant Brooklyn Nets jersey behind me, do you think part of this is playing into our perception anyway, at least, because of what's happened with the Brooklyn Nets this season? Because if you're a Knicks fan, you're probably
still feeling this exact way last year. And and the concerning thing is, there's no real other sport on at them. I mean, I've been watching the World Baseball Classic has sort of been my number one for the last week or two, and like basketball should really be grabbing my attention right now, but it's not.
I actually think a lot of the basketball fans get turned to the March Madness, especially Americans who probably have an affiliation to some of these schools. I think we shouldn't downplay how big the March Madness is.
Yeah.
So I think the NBA actually gets, you know, like impacted by the popularity of college, because I don't think people care about college basketball until March.
Yes.
Did you see that article? And I can't remember who put it out. It was like Bloomberg or something like that. That every March, the lost productivity due to March Madness in the US, and it's something like $17.9 billion just from people just watching it, which is insane to think about, obviously, the three of us coming from New Zealand, because, again, the idea of, like, even getting excited about Victoria University in Wellington playing against Otago University in, like, any sport, I could not care less, like, at all about watching something like that. This is wild over here.
I think I saw that headline. So they play game. I've only watched the odd action, but do they play games middle of the day, obviously, for that to be?
Yeah.
Just to get, because there's so many games to get through that they just have to kind of kick them off at.
Yeah.
The early rounds are so much fun. And they just say, yeah. And they're just so chaotic. Yeah. It's crazy. The one very small side note, just while we've pivoted off to this March Madness, it's interesting. One thing that they tried this year was hosting some of the playoff games in neutral areas where no schools are based, and their numbers went down big time, numbers in attendance. But I don't know. NBA needs to do something and, like, make it interesting. It just kind of – I definitely buy into the fact that after the All-Star game, it kind of hits this weird, like, lull. And I don't think a mid-season tournament is going to fix that.
Yeah, it's tricky. I think the March Madness thing is a really good point. But maybe, you know, by spending half of this topic talking about March Madness, we've maybe proved the point as to why the NBA is boring in mid to late March. So, yeah, there you go. One thing I did bring up, though, was the World Baseball Classic, which went on for the last couple of weeks. Japan winning last night with a win over the US. Cool moment, actually. Shohei Ohtani, the Angels star, striking out his Angels teammate, Mike Trout, two of the best players in baseball, for the final out of the game. That is what you want in the final of a big event. The Angels haven't been to the playoffs in a number of years, so we've been deprived of seeing those two on baseball's biggest stage in recent seasons, but it was cool to see that. I love the World Baseball Classic. I thought it was fun. There was so much passion in the teams, and I thought it was a fantastic event. Did you guys watch any of it, and what did you think?
I have so many apps on my phone. It gets very overwhelming when you wake up in the morning. You have bloody a million different messages and notifications. But the two ones that have been annoying me lately is every time Victor Wembanyama plays, and then I started getting these like weird notifications where it's like blah 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 and WBC, and I'm like, what the hell's WBC? So I did start watching a little bit of it. Japan getting up there is awesome. Like, this is one of the things that made me enjoy watching it. It's just like, it's not one of those weird international ones where you just like US being where Major League Baseball is, they don't necessarily dominate it because there's so many players from all around the world that now play that sport. And obviously it's huge in Japan. So it's great, and some of those storylines, exactly like you said, Si, like Ohtani and Trout, like what an ideal ending to that game, especially if you're sitting there as the MLB, because as we all know, like viewership number, they've struggled getting new fans into the sport for a while. So good timing for that, because there's two superstars battling it out on the world stage and getting those numbers, and people are going to be able to watch that in the upcoming MLB season as well. And Ohtani is just exceptional for baseball on a global scale. So the more international stars that we can get in there, the better. So yes, I did watch a little bit of it, but I'm more interested to watch it next time it's on because I'll be prepared for it. It kind of just snuck up on me and I didn't really know it was on.
Yeah, I reckon I would like to see them do, think of what happened with the FIFA World Cup. In the most recent one that was in Qatar, because of where it was and the temperatures, they shifted it to be within the middle of the European season, right? I feel like they should look to move that. They should have an international window. This is my sort of take or theory. They should create an international window so that Major League Baseball has a two-week break. Let's call it late July. Now, this WBC, it's only every 3 or 4 years, right, Simon? So it's not every year.
Every 4 years, yeah.
It's every 4 years, like a World Cup. And put that actually in the middle of the season, so the guys are all kind of fit and firing, and it's only going to be the guys that get picked for their respective nations. I reckon it should be right in the peak of when baseball is front and center and it's the absolute focus. So that's what I think Major League Baseball should look at that. The other thing is I reckon they should do things every year. So like if you think about all the nations that were really fun to watch, whether it's, you know, Mexico, Venezuela, Dominican Republic, Puerto Rico, US, they're all, you know, a few hour flight away. So you could do like a CONCACAF type tournament when it's not the World Cup. So you kind of have this 2 week period where basically Major League Baseball would stop in mid to late July. And whether it's just like a 4-team kind of quadrangular tournament or 6 teams, you know, Japan might come over and play like a 5-match series. Whatever, like just kind of each year it might be slightly different. But think of it like the like international rugby, you know, team, you play different teams each year or different comps. And then obviously it will culminate in this 4-year cycle of this WBC. That's my kind of take.
I think it's a great idea. And, you know, we're talking about addressing the struggles of baseball, particularly, or, you know, baseball and basketball with these long seasons. You find a good reason to break the season up or even shorten the season. You know, if you knock 10 games off the baseball season, I'm sure you can hear those sirens going out behind me. But Yeah, and it's like it gives them a perfect reason to sort of shorten the season, or at least break it up when it sort of gets into those dog days in July and August where the results just don't seem to matter anymore. I think you could even do the World Baseball Classic every 2 years, and then, you know, yeah, I don't know what you do in the alternate years, but maybe it's some sort of big qualifying event or sort of international friendlies. I think that's a great idea, and then that way you could also look into expanding the tournament as well, and, you know, either bringing in more teams or having, you know, a three match finals series rather than a one off game. So great. I think it's a great way to grow the game and to bring a bit more energy to the game in the middle of the season, and I'd love to see it sort of brought more into the limelight like that.
Those sirens behind you were the MLB commissioner sending the police to your house because you're robbing him of money.
He's suggesting like, someone had a good idea. You can't talk about that.
We want more games, not less games. What an idiot.
We're thinking 365 games.
Yeah, just watching it, though, I think, like, one of the cool things was, one, I never actually knew it was a thing up until, like, probably a week or so ago. But two, it just highlights again, like, you know, that baseball very much is a global game and a global sport. Mm. And again, like, I think MLB is one of the most frustrating sports leagues in the world, because it's like, it is a very easy sport to just pick up and travel globally with. You know, it's not like you've got F1 cars to move. It's not like you've got helmets and all this gear for people. Like, you literally have bats and baseballs, like, and maybe some pitching machines and stuff like that.
And some peanuts.
Why they don't, like, sure, literally look at doing more games in South and Central America, you know. Obviously, Canada's got a team, but, you know, through Europe, and try growing the game there through, you know, Australasia and Asia. Like, it just feels like a massive missed opportunity. But again, as all things with baseball, it's just a league that is just full of them. You know, the fact that they, I mean, last year, I think they put out, the Washington Nationals put out this really cool uniform that included, like, cherry blossoms and stuff on it. Like, the fact that they don't have more kind of, like, alternate uniforms that they share every year, like the NBA does, and try and market that more. Well, I love that shit. Do more of it.
It's the problem that sports like golf and tennis and these old sports that get stuck in their old ways have. And Formula One had it as well, and they've found a way to push beyond that. So, you know, baseball has to... You know, I'm not saying a Netflix documentary is the way to do it, but they do need a way to sort of, you know, find a way to get their audience younger, maintain the traditional aspects to the game, and also sort of re-energize the fan base a bit. So that is a good start, though. It's a good start for baseball to do.
I mean, like, you guys came up with ideas before. What about the opposing team gets to beat the shit out of the other team's mascot with baseball bats after the game?
There we go.
I reckon viewership numbers will go. Why aren't I the commissioner for a major sports?
No, it should be the mascot has to stand there, and the pitcher gets to throw a ball.
Oh, bats.
So Ohtani gets to throw his 102 mile an hour fastball
straight in the nuts.
Have you seen the pay of these commissioners?
Oh, yeah, it's bloody, what's his name? Roger Goodell's about to get extended.
Yeah. Yeah. What a gig. I can see why you wouldn't want to leave it once you've got it. Speaking of new sports and ways to grow sports, one sport trying to get off the ground at the moment in America, I mean, telling you, we are going to talk about some random shit on this podcast because there's not much going on. Major League Cricket. Cricket is trying to get off the ground in America. So I'll give you a couple of details. They've invested about $120 million in this league that will start in July of this year. It's kind of a new addition to the Global 2020 circuit. It's a, you know, three-week tournament where players come and play. They've refurbished one baseball stadium in Dallas, into a sort of 8,000-seater cricket stadium, which is exciting. And they've signed a bunch of international players: Aaron Finch, Mitchell Marsh, Quinton de Kock, a few others.
Stoinis.
Stoinis is coming. Stephen Fleming is going to be coaching the Dallas team, I think. So there's some, you know, they've sort of delivered on a few of the names, and certainly, you know, delivering on the actual league is what will get them traction. But do you think there's a path to this getting off the ground in America? And I'm not saying it needs to be, you know, the biggest event in America while it's on, but at least becoming something that, that is, you know, gets decent crowds and is sort of talked about in America.
$20 million, fuck me.
It's actually not much, really, when you...
I mean, it's not much, but it's also a lot considering the risk that's attached with cricket in the US, especially in a place like Texas. Look, I think, does it have an opportunity to take off? Absolutely. But the problem with cricket, as it's always been with cricket, is the complexity of the rules at times. I think if they could find a way to explain it in a broadcast to play it, to like new people watching the game, where it's not frustrating or confusing, it could work for sure. But you know, thank God it's 2020. Imagine trying to explain Test cricket to somebody that's never watched it before. Sounds like a made up thing. I think they've gone about it the right way in the fact that they've got their own single use stadium for it that is designed for it. I like the fact that it's only 8,000 people and it's not like a huge stadium, because I think getting 8,000 people that are new to a sport is going to be tough, especially when you look at, you know, some of the areas where MLS has struggled initially. So I hope it does succeed, though, because I think it'll be good for America. I think it'll be good for cricket players on the global stage. And coming over to America and having some kind of showcase would be great. And immediately when I thought about this as we were preparing for today's pod, it just kind of opened up the opportunity of almost like, and you can, this is going to lead into our next topic later on very well, but almost that idea of like an F1 style, you know, global kind of like global venues that are all somehow linked together. Like, how cool would it be to see 2020 teams just start traveling around tournaments, winning those tournaments, and they all allocate to points for a global thing? I know it's obviously not as easy as that because all these home tournaments have international rules and stuff like that. But yeah, we'll see. I'm going to watch, but I'm not going to hold my breath with this one.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things you'd have to give it a few years. I don't know if like I don't see like America becoming a realistically quality cricket side out of this, but I think I could see them actually creating a league that more and more stars will come to. Like, I could see it being run very well and become popular enough, and there'd be enough sort of money involved that you will start to see more and more. So, yeah, I don't know if that's necessarily going to elevate the local players to be, you know, competing at the World Cup. I don't think they're necessarily even trying to do that at this point. But I could see it just being, you know, when you think of it, the guys you just named, Finch, Stoinis, Marsh, you know, those guys, they were huge. They've all been huge contracts in the IPL. They're 2020 specialists, you could argue. A bit better than that, where they're obviously effective in other formats. But, you know, this is their bread and butter. And, you know, I think we'll see more of those guys, you know, whether it's like a Trent Bolt. I wouldn't be surprised if Bolt's a late signing, especially with Fleming being involved. So, you know, you're going to get the guys that maybe are taking a step back from, you know, towards the end of their careers, but still have a lot to give. And, you know, they go play in the English League. They go play in the Big Bash in Australia, the IPL. I think this will just become one of those on the circuit.
For sure. So apparently the salaries are in line with that of the Big Bash for the top guys and the 100 in England. So they're putting a bit of money into this. I think $1.1 million is each team's salary cap. And, you know, it doesn't sound like heaps, but you would think those overseas players are taking up a big portion of that. And so big salary cap.
It's not very long either, right? 3 weeks, yeah.
There's a lot of money to be paying out over 3 weeks. To maybe 16 players, 18 players maybe?
Yeah, that's always the other benefit I think the US always has over a bunch of other countries as well, is that you talk to an Australian cricket player, and you say, do you want to, you know, what countries do you want to spend 3 weeks in the world playing cricket in? If they haven't been to America, they're going to be like, oh, I'm going to go there. I'm going to go catch some sport while I'm over there and do all these other things. And, you know, like.
Exactly. Exactly. It's a great way to just get, like, guys, like, you talk to guys that play Major League Rugby and they're like, oh, yeah, like, yeah, the money, you know, obviously the money is going to play a big part, but also the chance to just go and live in New York or go and live in LA for, you know, 6 months of the year. And that's awesome because our sport never gave us the opportunities to do that. And it'll be the same with cricket.
I think one thing that, so as I was thinking, so all these things, I think, like, the fact that the money's in line, the fact that they're doing, it sounds like they've actually done this right, which is awesome to hear, because there's nothing worse than just seeing, like, leagues get started and then just immediately fold. One thing that was interesting, though, is it's going to be interesting to see what attendance is like, and I realize that they're just going to play in the same place in Dallas, which I think is actually probably a win.
For now, yeah.
But, like, yeah, because, like, looking at Major League Rugby, Major League Rugby is the interesting one because in my head, I would align the attendance numbers probably in line with those. Major League Rugby in the US, they have just over 2,100 people on average attendance for each Major League Rugby match in the US. The most that they've ever had is 6,000, and the least that they've ever had was 578 people. So, I mean, look, if they can get a quarter of that stadium filled consistently, that to me seems like a win.
Yeah,
they're going to be. They'll probably be relying a little bit on the Commonwealth countries. So whether it's sort of Indian, Pakistani expats, British, South African, Australian. Certainly, with a bunch of those big named Australians that we've just gone through. You know, if you've got some Australian expats living there or living nearby, you're sort of probably relying a little bit on that. Maybe they'll take along some American friends with them.
Turn it into like a thing like the Sevens. Just turn it into a party atmosphere.
Yeah, I think you have to. And you, particularly just to begin with, you got to sort of, you know, make it more of an event. But yeah, it will be hard. Like attendance will be tricky, particularly if they're playing every game in Dallas to start the, you know, for the first year or two.
Yeah.
Like Dallas is big, but it's like it doesn't have, you know, it's not like New York where there's a ton of people coming and going all the time that you can sort of sustain an event that's on every day for a few weeks. So that'll be tricky. But look, like there's form. I think I remember reading this. Willow TV is like the American cricket channel that you can subscribe to. 4 million subscribers to that channel in America. Which is a lot of people that are subscribing to a cricket-only channel. And, you know, it's Dave said, like, most of these people are expats, but, you know, if they can get it on there and get it somewhere else as well, and get, like, you know, there's people in America that will be interested in this, so there's definitely a path, I think, to making this a sustainable event.
Dallas is an easy city to travel to as well. So, like, looking at those numbers, where you're, like, 4 million, because, like, the population of Dallas is only like 1.2 million people. Mm. But the fact that there is such a big hub there and it's a fairly okay city to travel to from literally anywhere in the US and it's fairly cheap probably plays nicely into that because you're right.
Yeah, you'll get big fans that, and especially in this hybrid world, like there'll be a bunch of people that might be looking at that and going, well, why don't I go to Dallas for a couple of weeks and, you know, maybe travel down to Austin one weekend and in between every evening or a bunch of those evenings, you'll be able to go to the game. I'm talking about like a cricket fanatic, but that's definitely a doable thing in the sort of current climate with how everyone works.
Mm. Well, one other sport that has grown immensely in America and grown in this podcast as well, Formula One. So wait, so you were into the Formula One now. You've been watching the documentary and watched the Saudi Arabia GP on the weekend.
Absolutely. I even watched qualifying, which is ridiculous. It's a great fun sport. What did get me into it, though, was definitely Learn to Drive, which you two have been trying to get me to watch for a long, long time.
Learn to drive.
Did you learn to drive? I didn't
learn to drive watching that show. drive to survive. As I learned to drive in Formula One. So it's great. So loved it. And you know, it does a good job of explaining everything.
I'm coming in and out of this now because there's someone drilling in my house upstairs, and I assume it's coming through this mic. But you know, with that in mind, the success of Formula One has been well documented in America, and it's huge now. And we just talked about one sport that's trying to break into America. What other sports do you guys think could grow in America moving forward? Maybe not as fast as Formula One. Dwight, you got a shit-eating grin on your face. What are you going to say?
No. So, a bit of context. Dave said to us he has a cracker about what he wants to do. And I'm very fucking interested if he's going to say darts. Was it darts, Dave? Is it darts?
Is that what you think?
No, that's you, what you, I thought you were going to say.
Don't say pickleball.
No.
No,
so I've got one, genuine one. Pickleball deserves to be mentioned just because of how much it's grown, like exponentially.
It's got
but I'm just saying it's going to get bigger and bigger. But to me, that's fascinating because before it even hit New York, I was living in Austin, Texas for a couple months, and I could see it kind of there everywhere there. And then it's obviously with the better climates, and as it got to spring, like about this time of year, it started to sort of pick up in New York, and it was that summer, which would have been 2021. It just exploded. But no, the sport I'm thinking, which I thought of one that is like a genuine, like has a chance to be like commercially big, is flag football. And I'm thinking of it in a way like the sevens rugby in New Zealand. I think with with how successful or how popular that component of the All-Star or the Pro Bowl, I could just, and because obviously it's a sport that could be played by a lot of people out of, you know, without the head injuries, you're taking away the sort of the rough part of it. I guess it's more like touch rugby than it is compared to, what do you call it? Compared to sevens, it's more like touch rugby equivalent. I could just see that being harnessed and then, you know, then creating kind of a league. They could play it. Obviously, NFL is off season now. They could play it in the sort of springtime. Now, realistically, I'm not proposing that Tyreek Hill is going to be playing that, but America have got so many talented guys. You don't need to have necessarily, the big household names. You'd kind of start it at a lower league and then, you know, hope to sort of build it up that way. But I could see that.
So you could see this. Do you know how many people play flag football in the US every year? 7 million.
Yeah,
it's not a small sport at all here. But I look.
No, but there's no commercialization of it. Like really.
Yeah. So like.
That's what I'm talking about.
I do like your idea, Dave. Like about putting it around like a sevens type tournament. Because that's one thing that's really weird over here in the US is that we just have so much football on all the time. Obviously, there's the NFL. It's off-season in the NFL. That's not going to be news to anyone. But right now, we have, what are the other leagues? Arena football. We've got XFL, which is going on at the moment, which is doing okay numbers. And then what's the other one? US Football League. So there's like three other ones. And then I think there's even like lingerie football and stuff like that. But so there's a lot. So I like that idea of flag football, but I think it just needs to be done on that whole circuit kind of thing.
Yeah, for sure.
But I just don't, this is the problem that I think with it would be, is that you need people to get behind teams. So if you can't do teams, you've basically got to do countries. Which I think definitely does open it up a little bit. And then you just literally model it like the sevens. But yeah, it'd be interesting.
Hmm. It's an interesting debate.
Any other ones?
I mean, it's such a fickle thing to like, it's so tricky to predict which sports are going to take off and how. Like, I think the pickleball thing is going to fall flat at some point. And I don't think that's going to take off. And I'm surprised that it's getting all this money thrown into it. But I don't think that's going to go back. I could see cricket actually doing well. I thought for a while Ultimate Frisbee was going to become not a dominant sport, but more popular than it has become. And that's sort of not really gone anywhere. So I don't know. It's an interesting debate. But I don't have any sort of sport where I'm like, this sport is going to be huge.
So here's some good ones then. So we all know Pickleball is getting a whole bunch of investment at the moment. So for people that are listening, Joe Tsai, that owns the Brooklyn Nets, has a Pickleball team. Steve Nash, old coach, has a Pickleball team. Kevin Durant has a Pickleball team. So kind of like a few examples of like biggest growing stuff like over the recent few years is women's MLS seems to be getting a lot of attention and investment. Lacrosse is another one that's not particularly a hot take. Mm-hmm. So lots of lacrosse leagues as the sports becomes more accessible. Dave, I think you played lacrosse recently, didn't you?
No, the other guy.
Oh, that was Sai. But I kind of think one of the other ones that would be interesting is kind of the hockey, field hockey and roller hockey. Roller hockey's always been like a bit of a weird one, and I know they play it in New Zealand. That's starting to get more, but field hockey would be a good one. The problem the US is always going to have, though, is that with something like field hockey, I don't understand why somebody would play field hockey over a big established one like lacrosse.
True. And they don't.
Yeah.
And it's a hard thing to like break that one through. And I don't like, there's nowhere that's got field, that's like, I don't know where the money would come from for that.
Put money into it. Yeah, and with any of these leagues as well that would start up, like, you're just going to make sure the investment's there. And that's probably like going back to our chat about Major League Cricket or MLC, which is, it sounds like they're doing it right, because you can't expect these leagues to like make profit in their first year. Like, that's just not a great way to look into it.
So long as they're like, there's a long way to go for them. And you don't want to fall into the trap of signing, spending a big chunk of your budget on some flashy players, but then the domestic players are awful, or the grounds are awful, or, you've got to put the infrastructure in place. You've got to, build it from the ground floor up, basically. And there's potential there, but you're right in that it's like, you can't just, immediately have one tournament that's immediately turns a massive profit and you're away. It's going to be a slow thing. So fingers crossed for them.
Yeah.
But any final thoughts?
Here is my one. And I 100% agree with this, and I'm going to convince you guys.
You 100% agree with the thing you're about to say? Well, I would hope that you 100% always agree with it.
Sailing. And the reason why is I'm going to compare it to Formula One. It's basically Formula One on the water, right? It's the same thing. It's super expensive. Sail GP, all that needs is the investment of a Netflix-style documentary, and that shit would take off over here in the US and globally.
Well, the America's Cup turned into a bit of a Formula One style event.
Yeah, but like, that's the problem. Like, ignore America's Cup, because that's like your 4-year, 2-year, 3-year, whatever they decide.
I know, but it's more the technology that goes into sailing and the speed. Like, those boats are fucking impressive, the way they fly around the water now. And yeah.
Yeah, but Sail GP had their first season in 2019. Russell Coutts is the CEO. Larry Ellison backs it with Russell Coutts as well. So it's a pretty big one. Obviously,
he's
not going to be super fond of him. But look, if you see what happened to Formula One, like literally, Sail GP, it's using the same boats. It's using those catamarans that they do in the America's Cup. So I think it's... you do that, San Diego, San Francisco, off New York, down in the Gulf. Like, you'll just be cruising with money.
I know you weren't, Dave, but Thwaites, were you in New York for that? I think I arrived in New York just after they had it. They had, like, one of those, it wasn't Sail GP, it was just before the America's Cup. They had, like, these America's Cup sort of mini events, and New York hosted it one year. It might have been the end of 2016. Team New Zealand was racing around. It was pretty cool. But yeah, I would love to see it. Yeah, out on the Hudson, down in the New York Bay. Okay.
Well, so is there no Sail GP in the US right now, like in terms of the circuit?
No, there definitely is. Off San Francisco, and I think
so. It's already an established. But what you're saying is for them to grow the popularity of it in America.
Because you know, like it's. I feel like when we're looking and talking about a whole bunch of the stuff, like you've got to be able to explain the sport easily to people, which, you know, like things like Formula One and yacht racing, I think are difficult because you look at it from like an outsider's point of view and just be like, just make the car faster or make the boat faster. But there's obviously like tactics and a whole bunch of that plays into it. So I just feel like that's a very easy one that you could boost up pretty easily.
So they had it in Christchurch last weekend. That's why I did remember seeing some people talking about that. They've had it in Chicago as well, and it's in San Francisco in May. So last event of this calendar on the on Sail GP. Australia's going to win. New Zealand's in second. There you go. Gents, good episode. Great to talk to you again.
Always good to talk to you, lads. But yeah, thanks everyone for listening.
Oh, I got it wrong, actually. Thank you. By the way, it's actually New Zealand is top of the standings. Denmark's second. Australia's in seventh. I read the wrong chart. Anyway, enjoy the rest of your week.
If only there'd been a Netflix show to explain how standings work.
Which charts which. I don't know. Yeah.